Well, now, I make it quarter past eight, and I suggest that, first of all, we have questions to the speaker, and then after that, we'll have discussion contributions. So, I'm more concerned about elucidation, amplification of what he's already said for the first period. So, have I any questions first? Yes.
How will the new society function economically? How will people in the society cooperate on the division of labour? Presumably you're going to have a division of labour in the new society.
A socialist society will be one in which people produce wealth cooperatively and have access to that wealth as of right, as members of that society.
Just every society, isn't it?
Sorry?
Every society is societies where wealth is produced in cooperation and distributed.
Well, let's look at it. At the moment, what we've got is a society where it is necessary to cooperate in order to produce wealth on the technical level of production. But because of the way we run society, it's necessary to compete and destroy at the social level of wealth production. And what we have in capitalism is a dilemma between, on the one hand, the technical possibility of cooperating, so that there are now machines where I can put a diagram in Birmingham into a photocopying machine and it will come out in an office in New York or in Paris or in Moscow. Technically, we can do that. What we cannot do, and what rather we cannot do within the confines of capitalism, is have a society where the same diagrams are being drawn in London, in New York, in Moscow, in Peking, and they are all competing against each other. And there are people doing the same jobs in different countries and in different companies, all competing against each other. And what we have in capitalism is a vast number of people whose sole purpose is to do what by any objective standards is totally socially useless work, killing people. That by any standards must be socially useless work. Counting up pieces of green and blue and brown paper with pictures of the Queen on the front of it. That must be pretty useless work, unless you happen to be a fetishist. If you spend your time creating weapons for other people to use, that's pretty useless. If you are a talented and skilled scientist and you spend your time working out ways not to solve diseases, not to cure people, but working out ways to kill people more cheaply and more extensively, that by any standards is an absurd way to run a society. And we're not talking about a few crazy people doing this. We are talking about a very substantial section of the world population who at the moment are doing completely useless work. And that is not to mention the fact that within capitalism we have a whole class of people who, from the moment of their birth usually, are conditioned not to even consider the prospect of having to work. A whole class of people whose basic social position keeps them outside of production and distribution of wealth, because they own it and they don't need to produce or distribute it. Now, this is an absurd way to run an economy. Now, certainly, within a socialist world society, there are going to be occasions where too much food is produced for the people who want it at that time, where not enough food is produced, perhaps even because of a natural shortage, perhaps even because of social incompetence upon some of the people involved in it. Within a socialist society, there will certainly be people who will have particular needs and particular desires which society cannot satisfy. But what we can say about socialism is, and this is a major point, it will not be a society where the profit of a minority has to be always given priority over the needs of people.
Yes, but you haven't answered the question. How will society? How will resources in the new society be distributed? Presently, the price system acts as a means of communication across the division of labour. What will enable people on a worldwide division of labour to cooperate in the new society. Never mind about capitalism. This is not a question about capitalism. It's a question about the new society, socialism. How will these institutions, how will the economy function in socialism?
Well, you see, you say it's not a question about capitalism.
That's right.
And I haven't answered the question, but let's look at this. What did you say during the course of your question? You said, at the moment, in capitalism, it is the prices system which ensures that people get what they want. Yes. Well, quite honestly, I mean, I don't know whether you've been sort of spending the entire time I was talking working out your question, but it's evidently not the case. At the moment, people don't get what they want. At the moment, people need food and they're starving.
He knows that. We know that. Answer his question, right?
What do you say?
You know, not someone knocking a system, and I'm knocking with you. But I know, I'm like the person that asked the question, not to answer to the question.
Well, you want an answer to...
We have a system like from capitalism, because we listen to that, like in the room. But where I'm going to be, and where the question actually is at me, is so what are you going to do?
Right. Well, the first.
All right.
Well, the first answer to that is, it's not clearly a question of what the Socialist Party of Great Britain is going to do, because for socialism to be established, it's going to require a majority of people to understand what that means and to want it to happen and to cooperate in bringing it about. Assuming that that has happened, you then have to ask yourself a question. What are they going to do when they have got their society? Let us suppose that you are one of those people, and he's one of those people, who wants a society where production is for use. How are they going to run production? Well, a great deal of production, technically speaking, is going to be run very much as it is at the moment. But what is also going to happen is that instead of there being organisations like, for example, the Milk Marketing Board, whose main job is to find out not how much milk is required, but how much money people have to buy milk, instead of that organisation, there will be organisations which will be concerned with the distribution of milk. And the way in which people are able to find out whether milk is required is to ask people what their needs are. And once you have asked people, they will tell you. And if they are cooperating in the running of that society, we have to assume that what they will say is going to be roughly in line with what is actually the case, what they actually need. And then you ask people how much food they require. And you ask people what kind of houses they want to live in. You don't need to ask people, do you want to live in a slum? Because the answer is going to be very clear. They don't want to live in a slum. But if you ask people, do you want to live in houses which are designed in one way or another, do you want to live in that place or the other? That would be, in a socialist society, a subject for democratic discussion and participation, and bearing in mind the possibilities which the technology of that society would allow. Now, if what you would like me to do is to say whether a socialist system of society is going to have one way of organising housing or another, one way of organising food production or another, I cannot do it. And I cannot do it for a very clear reason. That a democratic society has to be run by the people in it. A cooperative society has to be a response to the needs and desires as expressed by the people in that society. And as the majority of people at the moment have not organised for socialism, then clearly it's certainly not for me or for the Socialist Party of Great Britain to lay down the precise details of how that society will run. But there is a more important thing. If you think that socialism cannot work, and you haven't said that you do think that, then of course it's necessary for you to say why it won't work. See, if somebody comes along and says, what we'll do is do away with lorries in order to transport these goods and introduce aeroplanes to distribute them, the first question that anyone will ask is, are there any objections to that scheme? Is there some reason why aeroplanes can't do the job better? If somebody says, let's clean up the atmosphere because dirty atmosphere is unhealthy for people to live in, the first question that is asked is there anything wrong with cleaning up the atmosphere? And of course, in capitalism, the answer is yes, it's not profitable. But that's the way it has to work. And in the same way, if you think that a society based on cooperation and mutual production according to ability and free access to wealth according to need is in some ways unworkable or utopian, then of course it's necessary for you to lay out precisely where it is unworkable and where it is utopian. As far as I am concerned, it's the simplest proposition in the world to have a society where food is produced for people to eat it, and they eat it because they have produced it in order to eat, where houses are built to live in, and they live in them because those houses were built to live in, not in order to get rent from them.
Does that actually answer the particular question?
No, it doesn't answer the question at all.
I think in that case we'll have to pass on from that question. To be quite honest,
I interrupted you, so the question could be answered, and I'm unfortunately made it wide.
Yes, you may think, but at the moment I'm chairman, and so I'll pass on to another question. We can easily return to it afterwards. If we find nobody else has got any other questions, by all means, let's return to it. Are there any other questions? Fair enough, then. Away we go.
We're in discussion now. Can I make...
Yes, I think
we are. Can I now outline...
Well, I think socialism will not work, because this is the very question that has not been faced up to by any socialist. Is the question of how, in the new society, we're going to allocate resources on the division of labour. Now, committees, it seems, are going to be too slow to solve the economic problem. And the socialist society, like all other societies before are going to face the economic problem. Now, the way this is solved, and it is solved in the capitalist society, is through the price system. Now, this is quite a separate... the idea of socialist economic calculation on the basis of common ownership is quite separate from whether capitalism works smoothly or not. But if we go on to this separate question about whether capitalism moves runs smoothly or not, we can see that capitalism runs far more successfully, far more smoothly than any of its predecessors. We can see, for example, that the population that capitalism has enabled to come into being dwarfs the previous social systems by many, many millions indeed. We can see that all of these population are relatively well fed, apart from the people who are the backward lands of India and China, which are still not fully capitalist. Now, if we come to have a look at the evidence in your talk, which I listened to every single word, and there wasn't very much evidence there at all, what we've seen is, nitpicking, you said that if we take the number of people killed in Hiroshima, we can find that these people are dying in... You didn't mention India and China. You said, in fact, that it was due to capitalism, but in fact you quoted, presumably you could only find... evidence of people starving in the pre-capitalist or relatively pre-capitalistic societies of India and China and South America, so in Africa. You said that the amount of people who are dying in these lands are equivalent to people dying in Japan after the nuclear explosions in Japan. Now, this is perfectly correct, but that is nitpicking in as much as the fact that the overwhelming amount of millions of people who are operating in capitalism are fairly well fed, better fed than they've ever been before. The standard of living in all capitalist countries have gone up, and they've gone up through booms and through slumps, even through world wars. So I think that most of your critique of capitalism is in fact nitpicking, but there is a completely separate question from the and much less important from the question of economic calculation in the new society. The methods you envisage are completely unworkable because they're far too slow. In order to introduce socialism, in order to make socialism a real possibility, we have to have, if you like, to more or less paraphrase what Marx said, socialism growing in the womb of the old society, i.e. socialism growing in capitalism. It has to grow as such that it will outpace capitalism. That it will be more efficient than capitalism. We have got no evidence whatsoever of a new society growing in the womb of capitalism. Instead, what you've got on a global scale is the advance of capitalism. Capitalism is still advancing in Russia. Capitalism is advancing in China. It is advancing in Africa. It is advancing in South America. Capitalism is a relatively new system. It is still advancing. There is no signs whatsoever of socialism. So, socialism is absolutely impossible simply because the socialists, and in particular the Socialist Party of Great Britain, have not worked out a system of an economics which will enable the division of labour to function in a communist society. While this is lacking, socialism will never have much force. Any members that the Socialist Party of Great Britain make will find the case intangible, and they'll find other parties that go in for more reformist type parties or running through the streets with guns, like the Socialist Workers' Party, more attractive, simply because it will give them something to do. So it seems to me then that your criticism of capitalism is trivial, but that is beside the point. What is most important is that you lack socialist economics in order to make communism work economically.
Well, we said this was discussion time. The speaker has, that contributor has given, has seen your criticism. Steve Coleman's ward, no evidence whatsoever. He's reiterated his fervour that it cannot work. He hasn't shown for a moment why it cannot work. He's also confused the development of capitalism in certain parts of the world to its growing supersession in other parts of the world. He can't see that either. Now, anyone else want to contribute? Well, I'll expand my contribution in that case. And, they must be friends of yours, mustn't they? How strange. Well, now, let's get down to what this criticism is. First of all, the criticism is about capitalism. It was nitpicking about capitalism. And Steve Coleman said, the defenders of capitalism say that the capitalist system supplies people's needs. And Steve instanced a number of fronts, but the most striking, of course, was the food one, because that's where people die, and that's very tangible, where capitalism didn't suit those needs. Now, the contributor from the floor said, but those countries are not capitalist. As if there were parts of the world that modern capitalism does not touch. As if there were areas from which capitalism did not get its commodities, its sources of raw materials, its labour, and so on. As if there were parts of the world where the developed capitalist states did not put in their own puppet dictators to make sure that the country stayed at the level of economic development which it was already at, because either of strategic reasons, or more immediately, very often, because they provided a source of raw materials of particular types. In other words, the contention of the Socialist Party of Great Britain is that there is virtually no part of the world which modern capitalism does not touch and does not, in the main, control. Those parts of the world that it does not control are insignificant. If free enterprise, in inverted commas, hasn't reached there, it's because free enterprise can't see any profit there. But it would be there like a shot, if it could. And one of the phenomena we've seen in the last 10 years is capital moving out of the areas of high-priced labour to the areas of cheap labour. And that's partly due to technological developments, because skills have become less important than they were, and it's possible once again to use human beings as machine fodder. So Taiwan, the Philippines, places like that, Hong Kong, have become major areas of production because their labour is cheap. So that's the first contention. To suggest there are areas of the world which are not touched by capitalism is entirely false. Whether they become well-developed areas of capitalism is another question entirely. It has nothing to do with whether they're part of the capitalist system, which they are. The question is it worthwhile capital developing those places fully? In some places the answer is yes, in some places the answer is no. It very much depends upon the state of the economy, boom or slump, and it depends upon rates of profit. In times of boom, you will find capital, as always, going out into more and more risky ventures, more and more distant places in the world. In times of slump, you see contraction, and so there'll be less of that. So, I think the contention of the speaker that capitalism does not do what it claims it does is still amply justified. It fails to satisfy some people to the extent that they die. But he went on further than this, and he pointed out that even in those advanced areas of capitalism, where, as our contributor says, the standards of living are higher than they were 100 years ago, and higher still than they were 200 years ago. Perfectly true, and no one would gainsay it. And no socialist would ever suggest that socialism could have come about without capitalism. Capitalism is a necessary stage in development. What the socialist would, however, say is, look at the condition of these so-called kings of the world, these people like us, who now can build things like that, and can put space shuttles up in the air, and can put satellites up. What about the living conditions of the average member of the working class, in comparison with what is possible? Marx also said, since we're going to quote him, it doesn't matter whether the house you live in is a hovel or a mansion, it very much depends, and I'm paraphrasing here because I can't remember the words, on what goes up next door to it. That's what counts. So that what matters in capitalism is not whether the working class are better off than the peasants 200 years ago or 300 years ago or the slaves of 1,000 years ago. What matters is the difference between the living standards they've got and the technology and the wealth production which they have produced and the potential which they could have from that, but which the profit system prevents them from having. What matters is not the degree of productivity, the rate at which they could produce. What matters is the fact that capitalism says, stop, 3 million of you out. There is no profit to be made in your employment. It may be that the capitalist system says that your life from 15 to 65 shall be devoted to working for us. When we say it stops, although your mentality and your hands and your back may be developed according to that, you must stop. You must cease to be a worker. You must cease to be that which we say is the most fulfilling thing. We tell you that work is the way to fulfil yourselves, but stop, because there ain't no profit in it. And if we can pay you a dole, we will do so. If it gets too tight, as it did the last time, we shall cut the dole, and cut the dole, and cut the dole. And there'll be all sorts of moral reasons. Right, so this is how capitalism even supplies those people who, our speaker over here said, are better off than they used to be. He doesn't, in fact, talk about these newly developed areas of capitalism like Taiwan and Hong Kong and talk about the living conditions in those, which you see occasionally on these films about the Hong Kong police and the sort of conditions they live in. He doesn't, in fact, in his private pricing system, talk about heroin. He doesn't talk about marijuana. He doesn't talk about the alcohol business. He doesn't talk about the tobacco business. This sort of stuff. The way in which the profit system will try and harness people's needs and try and create people's needs. So, whether capitalism serves human interests, I'll leave you from that to judge. You can probably think of far more. I want to just come around to this question of the way socialism will be organised.
I realise I'm taking a lot of time, but nobody else signified a wish to speak. The problem about the system of society which we are calling socialism is that it is so simple that it boggles some people's imagination. They are afraid of dealing with simplicity. To say, as the speaker said, that houses will be produced because people need houses, and when we found out what people want, they will be produced as they say they want them. That seems too simple. That apparently is not possible. Well now, compared with capitalism, it is not. Because the price system is the only way in which there is any indication of what needs are and what should be produced. There is an embargo on information in capitalism. Industries and even sections within an industry do their very best to prevent their competitors from knowing what they are producing. They do market research and they keep it to themselves. It is simply unknown from day to day what the world market copper is. Only indication is the stock market. But if, as in the case of silver, you happen to get a chappy who thinks he will corner the market and goes on buying and buying and buying silver because he has the capital with which to do it, what indicator is the market then?
And supposing you get a cartel, supposing OPEC, the oil producing and exporting countries, or some other cartel gets together and says, we have worked out that marginal profitability is this. That's to say, we don't need to produce any